You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A policy area looking to become a feature of this year's election is superannuation, the income allowance Kiwis become eligible for when they hit 65. Although often considered an insured privilege paid across one's life, superannuation is paid out of the yearly budget and is by far the largest benefit in New Zealand. Historically, it's been a thorny topic for any legislator to change, but as people live for longer and longer and the age of eligibility for superannuation remains the same, the cost of the policy is increasing. A recent OECD autopsy of the New Zealand economy says this is becoming unsustainable, and the National Party says they agree and will campaign in this election to raise the age of eligibility. I spoke to Honorary Associate Professor working in the Pensions and Intergenerational Equity Hub at the Economics Policy Centre, Susan St. John, about why she opposes raising the age of retirement and what alternatives she prefers. All right, welcome to the show, Susan. I want to start our conversation today by just gauging what was your first reaction when you heard that the National Party was going to be campaigning upon raising the retirement age.
I felt a sense of despair, to be quite honest, because unless we know what the problem is, we're not going to have the right solution. And I think that he's defined the problem to be that of affordability. So he's looking at the books and he's seeing the dollar sign and he's thinking, well, we have to rein this in, you know, the state shouldn't be doing this. This isn't the way to do policy. You've got to understand what the problem actually is. So, okay, what is the problem? I would say that it's an immediate problem, that we've got an issue around intergenerational fairness as perceived by the young. What they see is wealthy older people able to access a generous pension at 65, even if they're in full-time work, while students and other groups are really struggling. We've never seen the food bank so busy. Child poverty is growing. The older age group themselves are struggling, many of them, in early retirement or pre-retirement, don't have adequate housing. They don't have adequate incomes. They also are ending up at food banks and in hardship in a way that we're not used to seeing in New Zealand. So if we think that's the problem, how can raising the age, maybe in 10 years' time, which is National's previous policy, that you would start from about 2037, raising it until it was 67 by 2041. How can that possibly be the answer? All you're going to do is, yes, you will prevent a few younger superannuitants getting their superannuation, but at the same time, you're going to create a whole raft of other problems of those that have struggled to reach the age of 65, now have to wait for two extra years and have completely inadequate circumstances and are unable to work. So when we take that kind of lens, we end up thinking about wider solutions. And I look at the Social Security budget, which is about $46 billion, and you look at the bulk of that going to superannuitants and you think, could we redistribute some of that money immediately from the top end of superannuation into these other areas which are affecting the working age population and younger people? Because we really need to invest in that group if we're going to cope with an ageing population in the future. And that would suggest that you would be looking at some way of reducing superannuation against income. So the work that we've been doing at the Pensions Hub is to work out a way of tinkering with the tax system so that you claw back from the top end effectively the advantage from having New Zealand superannuation. So people can still access it, but if they do, then the taxes that are applied to their other income mean that they're going to be repaying that amount as their income increases. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're interested in the idea of testing people's superannuation in some way against their means, their wealth, so a means-tested superannuation of some form, at least in the sense of taxing their income.
I do think that we have to be very careful here. If we look across at what the Australians do, they have a draconian income and asset test that I don't think would be palatable at all to New Zealanders. What we used to do from the years 1985 to 1998 was impose a surcharge on superannuitants' other income, and that raised a significant amount of useful other income for the state. So what we are suggesting is not a full means test, because that raises all sorts of issues and we really don't want to go there. We want to enjoy the good part of New Zealand Super, make sure that people understand it is there as a basic income, a cushion that they're entitled to, but if they opt into it, they can expect that there will be a much higher tax on their other income. We don't want to affect probably 60% of superannuitants who've got very little extra income anyway. We're really talking about those on higher incomes who don't need superannuation but do need the security of having that basic income to fall back on if they need it.
Right, and so it's this support for the people who are not working. One of the parts of the logic behind the Australian means testing, from my understanding, is that testing against people's assets means that if someone does have, you know, they have 20 investment properties but they don't work anymore, that wealth that they have comes into their retirement. Is the logic here that the process of acquiring that knowledge about people's wealth and pulling that into the system is too burdensome upon people and too bureaucratic? That's definitely been a critique I've heard of the Australian system.
Yeah, I think it is exceptionally complicated. It's about a 40-page application, and you've got to keep your details up to date so that if your circumstances change, you inherit money or whatever, you've got to continually update in Australia so that they can change the amount of pension that's due. But it operates in a very vicious way there. It cuts them at very low levels, really. And I think in New Zealand, we wouldn't like that. We wouldn't buy that. It wouldn't be possible politically to do it. I think that we need that compromise between an Australian type of means test and full universality. We had that compromise in the consensus that was reached in the Accord in 1993 between the main political parties, that we would have a surcharge. So it is in our history, and we have to be careful that we don't try and impose models from overseas on our system, which is quite different. But having said that, I think it's really important that we don't expect that somehow we're going to get enough back from superannuation to cover all sorts of other needs that we must spend money on, such as climate change prevention and all the rest of it. That requires a properly designed wealth tax, which isn't age-based and is separate to what I'm talking about here.
In regards to this idea of perhaps redistributing some of the money that we do give to superannuation into people who are going to food banks, as you mentioned earlier, and younger people who are doing it harder, what other people would be impacted? I mean, there's this equity component here.
Absolutely, an equity component.
What are other equity concerns that you have with perhaps raising the retirement age as is being proposed?
Well, just raising the age, if you could do it tomorrow, for example, it would be extremely inequitable for those people who are just hanging out because their bodies were worn out by 65 and they couldn't physically continue at their labour-intensive job. And there's a lot in that situation. But it's also that ethnically Māori, Pacifica have lower life expectancies, and they may reach retirement age in much less healthy condition, and it would impact very much on them. So it wouldn't be a question of just saving money by raising the age. You would have to work out all sorts of ways of being able to address the hardship that would be created by substantial minorities.
Thinking about the ageing and different communities with shorter life expectancies, do you think there's a stronger case to say that we should be testing that against people's backgrounds?
You mean adjusting the pension for life expectancy?
Yeah.
In some way?
Based upon maybe community or perhaps formal professions?
I think it would be extraordinarily difficult to do that when you think how racially integrated we are as a country. How do you separate out? And also remembering that life expectancy is an average, and within that average you've got a wide range of experience of people dying young or living an exceptionally long time. I wouldn't like to see life expectancy as being the basis for setting the level or access to the state pension.
And on that idea of setting the life expectancy as the level, would you be against indexing the age of eligibility to superannuation?
Yeah, I don't think that's a particularly good idea. I think we should be addressing the health inequities that bring about these lower life expectancies.
You mentioned the surcharge that was agreed by the major parties in the 90s. Maybe you could flesh that out for our listeners. Did you have a conceptualisation of how that worked?
It was complicated for people to understand, but it essentially started off, I think it was 25% extra tax rate above an exempt amount for a superannuitant's other income. It was complicated because superannuation itself is taxed and people didn't understand the way it worked. And, you know, even then, Revenue Department was saying, well, look, just leave it up to us to calculate it for you. I remember doing my father's tax return and finding it pretty tricky. So I think we have scope to rethink how we do it, and the way that we've suggested it could be done is to say, look, let's make New Zealand superannuation a basic income, untaxed, just like a grant. And then if people opt into it at 65, and many people won't bother because they'll be working full-time and think, well, this isn't going to work for me. But if they do opt in, then they agree that all their other income will go onto the separate tax scale. And you can model different kinds of approaches to that tax scale to deliver whatever saving you actually want to deliver. And once people saw how that worked, that the basic income is unconditional income, but if you're opting into it, you're paying it back on a different tax scale for your other income. I think that that idea of basic income would start to be seen as a good thing for the 21st century. So older people could have that basic income if they want to stop their paid work and go and help their families and do unpaid work or volunteer work. And that's a really important contribution that's facilitated by having this basic income. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We don't want to destroy what's good about our pension system.
Before we end the interview today, is there anything you want to leave us with, Susan?
I just feel that younger people need to know that somehow the society cares about them and values their contribution and wants them to stay in New Zealand and wants to support them when they undertake education. And so there's a whole issue around student loans we should be looking at. Could we have some innovative policies that would enable student loans to be written off in a way that rewards people who stay and work in New Zealand? At the moment, all we see are cutbacks, and so we've lost the third year for tertiary free fees. Now, that may not have been the best way to help, but it was something. And now there's very, very little.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us today, Susan St. John.
Thank you.
That was Honorary Associate Professor working in the Pensions and Intergenerational Equity Hub at the Economics Policy Centre, Susan St. John, about why she opposes raising the age of retirement and what alternatives she prefers.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.